Hello, everybody. Thank you. Let's slowly take our seats. It's a great pleasure to introduce Joseph Francis. He's with Accenture. He's a principal director. He has 30 years of experience working in supply chain. He used to be the CIO for Compaq and HP, and he has been instrumental with the Supply Chain Council. He used to be the CEO and CTO. And he has worked with 3,000 companies over the years, including HP, Cisco, Sprint, Lenovo, HP, Intel. So without further ado, I'm introducing Joseph, who is going to talk about the supply chain use cases and how Accenture is helping customers with that. Thank you.
Thank you. Hey, good morning. Can everyone hear me okay? I've got a boomy voice, but I can't quite tell. So I want to talk to today, and thanks for Claudio Lima, who asked me to come to the conference after I spoke in, I think it was San Jose, about blockchain. I've been working in it a couple of years, and it's been an interesting journey. There's many different levels it's been working on. You tend to get stuck into the blockchain as Bitcoin kind of paradigm, and in supply chain, we keep pulling them out and say, no, it has many more applications. My client focus, I'm innovation and thought leadership, which is I'm the one that they drop in who tells them amazing things, what the future is going to be like. Then they pop me back out, and someone has to come in and do the actual work, who then kill me because I create expectations that are pretty far out. I've been working in blockchain and order management and logistics, in media. So, you know, something like if I'm going to take an AutoCAD drawing and put it in a blockchain and certify it and send it to a governmental institution for fire control. I've done some specifications for that. I've done some blockchain and research. So are people familiar with like some of the open research journals, like PLOS, others? I'm a strong advocate, and I've been working with Australia Group on taking public research in blockchain and trying to drive public research through blockchain-mediated peer review, control, and distribution. I'm going to talk a little bit about device as a service, which is a new upcoming sort of supply chain paradigm. Maintenance, repair, and overhaul. So has anyone here ever flown in an airplane? Okay. So, you know, they need a lot of maintenance, repair, and overhaul, and Accenture's done some great work around how do you manage a lot of that with blockchain so you have secure parts and refurbishment and know the state of the airplane. And just another one. Has anyone ever seen the TV show Big Bang Theory? So I'm Sheldon. So I have worked for years not to be super nerdy and technical, and sort of I oscillate back and forth. So if I get super nerdy and technical, just wave your hand and say, you know, get over it. I wanted to set some stuff on blockchain to begin with. Someone said earlier, you know, blockchain is not blockchain is not blockchain. I've worked with a number of people where I said, what do you think blockchain is? And I get these wild kind of descriptions. And I wanted to just start with a little bit of history. Has anyone ever played treasure hunt as a kid? It's universal. It exists in all countries and all cultures. I did my little research. You know, you've got a clue, black and white and red all over. It's a newspaper. You find your newspaper. There's a toy for the kid. Then the next clue appears. Find a rainbow in a box. Oh, I got my crayons. You know, so you go through that. So it's a linked chain, right? One of the simplest children's games is a linked chain with little objects when you decode each link. Sound familiar? So going backwards a little bit, I got my thing on auto run. So another one is geocaching. It's where you have a geolocation of something. It's a hash, the next item. I'll go to the armory. There's a logbook. I get a hash in the next item. Sounds very familiar, right? A lot more like blockchain. Okay. This is all blockchain actually is. So when I talk to people about what is blockchain, there's a ledger. Okay, it's a list of blocks. Blocks have pointers to prior blocks. They have hash codes. So it's been, you know the block hasn't been corrupted or modified. On top of that, that's extended by the participants over time. So the blocks keep extending. Slightly different than a, geocache or a, child's game in that it keeps on extending. You broadcast results of changes to a network of participants. And there's a bunch of good stuff. Basically for me, it's the network that's fascinating about this. Supply chains are all about networks. It's all about tier one, tier two, tier three suppliers, channel partners, downstream customers purchasing. Having all of the data of all the participants in a network, in a blockchain network, so they can share the data, look at their supply chain performance, and make decisions is a fairly amazing thing to do, very complicated to do today. So one of the things I'd like to give you, so we started out with Stack. I showed you, like, blockchain is these blocks with little blobs of data in it. Let me take that and position that in a supply chain stack. I'm going to use supply chain as quoting, planning, sourcing, manufacturing, deliver, return. There's a performance layer of supply chain, okay? When you hear IoT, that's one sort of analog to digital conversion, performs work in a supply chain. If I hear about humans are the best analog to digital converters in supply chains. There's also robotic process automation. These people are doing stuff in this layer of supply chain in the real world. The next layer that comes up above that, the transact. So does everyone know what ERP is? Okay, CRM, integrated business planning, transportation management, field service management. This is where my analog to digital data gets transacted. It's checked for integrity, it's checked and stored, all the stuff sort of happens, gets locked in a processing system. What I'd like to do is flow all the transaction data into a blockchain network. So it's a secure journal, has all the features of supply chain, has all the blocks lined up. You heard the prior speakers talking about time sequencing, okay, integrity, generation, guarantees, all of these things. I can now take my transactions and lock them in across multiple enterprises in a blockchain. So I have that, you know, that treasure hunt of data about my blockchain all distributed among possibly millions of partners across enterprises. Blockchains are really bad. They're very crappy data structures. And what is a good data structure is an index. What I'd like to do is take all my blockchain data. I want to present the information in a way that I can look at it, right? I call that the visibility layer. So this provides visibility and understanding across supply chains of all the blockchain elements. Has anyone ever heard of Google? Okay, people have heard of Google, right? What is Google Index? Unstructured data flowing in all of the internet. Has everyone ever heard of the dark web? That's unstructured data with no index. If your blockchain in an enterprise doesn't have a visibility layer that's indexing the content, it's just as good as the dark web, which is to say, not very good at all. I'd like to know what my supply chains are. I'd like to know which transaction went to whom, when. I'd like to search for it in a few seconds. This is something frequently overlooked when we talk about blockchain in supply chain. It's a huge function. If I'm going to be doing business analytics, AI, machine learning, big data, I went through my buzzword bingo and I ran out of words, right? They actually have to sit on top of indexed, structured information to make inferences. So they don't talk to blockchain directly per se. They're going to talk to the indexing and information provoking layer that sits on top of the immutable transaction structure. On top of that, my AIs have said, hey, here's a bad trend in this blockchain. There's something wrong with the logistics. Pricing is going a little bit wonky. I'm going to trigger workflow, supply chain service management, then to provide closed loop controls onto the supply chain. So I call this kind of the supply chain stack, the perform, transact, transport, present, analyze, control. Does that make sense? It's kind of a simple, I call it the Goldilocks. It's not too complicated. It's not too simple. This is how supply chains, in our view, are going to look in the future. And where blockchain is positioned as the inter-enterprise structure, people still have to index it. People still have to analyze on top of that. But it's a secure mechanism to handle all that. So once I've got that, now I'm going to have something called the... See if I can stop my presentation from moving. I call it the circle of apps. Do you remember the circle of trust with Robert De Niro? I'm dating myself. Circle of Fifths in music. Okay, Circle of Apps. I was in Supply Chain Council. We had a framework for supply chain called SCORES. Anyone ever heard of SCORE? How many people here work in supply chain? Okay, a couple. SCORE is a universal standard that describes supply chain processes. It breaks it down into plan, source, make, delivery, distribution, returns, and enables. Okay. Around that, there's another 50 or 60 sub-processes that work in supply chain. The future that we're seeing emerge in supply chain is that you don't have all of the supply chain and all of the apps in their silos inside companies, but rather a lot of the supply chain functions are apps, standalone ideas, where they talk to each other via secure private blockchain. Okay? This goes to what's called a Gartner Stage 5 maturity, where all the people participating in the blockchain network share their resources in the blockchain. It's an interesting idea. It's extremely difficult to do today to get what's called the level 5 blockchain. It's inherent in the design. We see the first wave of technology to do this. We're already doing implementations. One of them is analytics benchmarking control tower. That's where I showed you the blockchain has data across all the different participants, build an index, build control structure and analytics on top of that. It's happening. Planning, so sales and operations planning, planning for sourcing, deliver, and manufacture, that's being pushed. The planning data are being pushed into blockchain now to share among participants that have to collaborate for planning. And finally, deliver technology and logistics, routing, sort of order controls, this kind of stuff is also happening now, having implementations in blockchain for real. So there are other areas that aren't touched on so much. I think there's a blockchain group in logistics that started up to look at the standards and processes in the technology around deliver, some others in other technology areas. These are where we're seeing now in 2018. Our belief is by around 2025, these are going to become extremely standard, very common, and I can call an app to do my planning that has access to my and my service providers and my channel partners' blockchains to do the analytics. I can call an app to do rating and routing that looks among collections of blockchains for the most efficient way to get a product from point A to point B. I could call an app that will tell me who's the best supplier for this material based on pricing and availability. Okay, I don't have to try to do that all myself. Blockchain, by sharing the information, provides the sort of the core of all of these apps in the supply chain, what we used to call the supply chain processes, begin to talk to each other. Okay? Talk a couple of supply chain models that are changing. There's three big ones, the build to stock. I think anyone that's ever worked in supply chain knows, hey, I need 1,000 boxes, I have 300 on hand, 1,000 minus 300 is 700, I look at the lead time, I've got to go build 700 boxes. I'm triggering my manufacturing based upon a plan. Build to order. Has anyone ever bought furniture from Europe? What's the lead time for furniture from Europe? You can't have it delivered tomorrow, right? They're only going to build that table for you, and you're going to deliver it like 3 months later. That's build to order as opposed to build to stock. Engineered order basically says, hey, I want a jet plane with some very special characteristics that have to be engineered. Supply chain for that is much more complicated. Call it requirements driven, execution aligned with complex validation execution. In reverse logistics, so in the military, quite important, MRO, maintenance, repair, overhaul, convenience returns, defective returns, trying to get management and recovery of the return material. These are all very traditional supply chains. The speaker prior to me said we had a heuristic to see, hey, is this business area good with supply chain? You'll probably find in most supply chains, a lot of this stuff is already done completely effectively already with existing technology. However, what we found is that using blockchain, you can actually improve the performance of a lot of the processes and dramatically lower the cost. The most common technology for two businesses to talk to each other is called EDI. The most common technology for EDI is called ANSI X12, American National Standards Institute, X.12. A single message to pass between two providers can cost somewhere between $2 and $3 per message. Think about that. Email transport between two companies can cost about a billionth of a penny, yet EDI transactions, which are smaller than email, cost 2 to 3 million times more today. If you move this to blockchain, the price of business-to-business transactions falls through the floor for ordinary supply chain, and also it's essentially real-time. You don't have the huge latency that's embodied in EDI transport that was based on technology from the 70s, okay? I mean, we're talking Cat Stevens technology, okay? There are three new supply chains we're seeing emerging very rapidly. One of them is called device as a service. Has anyone seen the commercial where Volvo, you can get a Volvo car with your iPhone? You just punch the button, oh yeah, now it's a Volvo car. You don't actually own it. You possess it, but you don't own it. Okay. Device as a service. Volvo is a service. Laptop is a service. Refrigerator is a service. Okay. I don't actually have to own it. I possess it. But in order to have a supply chain where I'm distributing and controlling inventory in the field like that, I have to have enormous amounts of detailed tracking and management information about it. Blockchain is the perfect solution. And in fact, it's hard to envision other solutions to do field-level management of distributed inventory that's possessed but not owned. Okay, interesting paradigm. We're doing work with this right now with certain customers, so very interested in that. Build to serve. Okay, some of you may have heard of something called CPFR, collaborative planning, collaborative planning, forecasting, replenishment. CPFR is a nice 80s technique. It's extremely difficult to implement because you have to have perfect inventory visibility, perfect order transparency, perfect shipment transparency among the partners. So it's not, generally, if I'm a Walmart and I have 150,000 suppliers, it's hard to go to 150,000 suppliers and say, tell me everything about all your inventory now for all the suppliers in real time, and they all want to sign up and do it. So some can force it. A Walmart, a Target can force it. With blockchain, you can say pure service level, I'll always agree to have your store shelf stocked 98% of the time when a customer wants something. I can have all the data flows and all the invisibility among parties that's secure with blockchain. It's extremely difficult to do with ordinary business-to-business interchange. It's extremely easy to do with technology. My suspicion is you're going to see many more implementations of pure service level attainment into, you know, between trading partners. Third big one that's happening in supply chain is called the circular supply chain, closed loop supply chain. So has anyone ever had a telephone or a computer where they say, oh, you'll get a new, you get your new iPhone and return the old iPhone for $100 and you get some money back, right? That return cycle is not just iPhones, it's the carpet on the floor here. It's chemicals that are used in manufacturing that get reworked. There are an enormous number of supply chains that are closed loop. The result of one supply chain feeds back and is raw material for the next one, and it goes through loops and loops and loops. Their interest is maximizing the recoverability of the inventory in the system. If they can get 70% recoverability, hey, that's great for the environment. It also, by the way, reduces costs dramatically. And it requires very fine-grained tracking of everything that goes on in the supply chain. Whenever you have to have very fine-grained tracking, it's difficult to do with today's technology. It's actually quite easy to do with blockchain. So these are a couple of supply chain models that are emerging that we're working on actively. Device as a service. I'm Accenture, so I'm a consultant, so we have to make these incredibly detailed slides with five-point type that cover the entire slide, and you have to get a microscope and read through it. So this is my Accenture slide, not to be catty. Client wants an object, they understand what they need, they look at a catalog. The catalog is in the blockchain, so anyone can look in the catalog and see what they need to get. They've chosen something, they have a contract. I want 500 laptops for my company. I don't want to own them. You own them. I'll use them. You'll keep refreshing them. The contract for that is set up in the blockchain. Oh, by the way, I then send a message to finance partners who actually finance them owning the object, okay? Blockchain mediates that. I buy the devices, and I've got to fulfill them. The fulfillment path, your refrigerator is on its way. Your refrigerator is around the corner. Your refrigerator is about to be installed. All of this goes through blockchain. I want to use it. So assurance, registration, tuning, all of the registration and who possesses the object and where, which is vitally important when someone else owns it. And by the way, you're going to sell, asset-backed shares on financial markets to pay for it all. They have to know where their product is. Do that with blockchain. Background assurance. I'm going to monitor the refrigerator. I'm going to monitor your laptop. I'm going to monitor your networking device. All the events are journaled in the blockchain, so I can have a number of participants who are allowed to analyze and control the performance. Okay? On down. Support history and orchestration of multiple parties that want to see the entire history of a device and all the repairs and all the switchouts that have been done. Lifecycle history. Oh, by the way, this device is beyond end of life. It's the wrong operating system. You've got to upgrade. We're going to manage that. That's in blockchain. Fulfillment orchestration at end of life cycle for the new. All of this is a very new supply chain model, device as a service. All of it is beautifully orchestrated over all the different life cycles with blockchain. Doing it without blockchain is actually not that easy. With blockchain, it's extremely easy to build networks of thousands of service providers that partner to do tuning, performance monitoring, repairs. You don't have to have every possible capability in your own company. You orchestrate it and communicate with blockchain. So that's a 2025 kind of thing. We're starting on it today. We're going to have some live device as a service with blockchain within 6 months, I'd say. It's a real thing. This is not a hypothetical. Okay. Does this make sense a little bit? This is where blockchain starts locking into practical kinds of flows. Use examples. Okay. Logistics. Does anyone here work in logistics? Shipping, freight. If you work in government, if you work in defense, there's a whole group part of defense that's involved just in logistics. Part of it, 1PL, these are the short haul, these are the men and women that have a small truck that gets stuff from point A to point B. This is actually Uber for logistics. Is one of the largest growing areas of logistics, okay? Billions of dollars are in play to build capabilities in this area, and it's the perfect one for you being able to hook in to a blockchain that stores all the information about the transportation. You can have an app, a node, whatever you need to talk to it. It handles all the data interchange. 2PL, collections of owners, operators, okay? Interesting thing you'll start seeing is elastic warehousing, where you don't own a warehouse, okay? You don't own the property, but you have a warehouse, but it can expand to any size as you need. That expansion and contraction will be mediated through blockchain-level visibility to actual shipping volumes and requirements. 3PLs. Everyone here who works in logistics has heard of 3PLs and 4PLs. 3PLs are dying. It's quite strange. They're having a lot of problems. 3PLs were collections of these services. It's a very mature market. They're beginning to have consolidation, so you're getting fewer players. APL, you're starting to see bankruptcies. They're having a hard time getting margin, and they're certainly making no investments in technologies. They're going to get wiped out unless they start moving to blockchain to mediate a lot of the work. 4PLs, lead logistics, even worse. Orchestrator, manager, multiple 3PLs. Lack of leading investments, best of breed. What you just saw earlier about the customs movement across borders, okay, these companies should be doing this and should be making the investments now and should be coming out with fantastic services. They're not. We're seeing these people are coming out with fantastic services at a very individual level to handle the new multimodal freight, to do cross-border freight, these other kinds of things. Very interesting stuff coming up. What we see in 2025, a couple more apps, okay? I call it 5PL. This is where they own the entire supply chain. It's not just the logistics or warehousing or order fulfillment. There's a great company, Li & Fung, if anyone knows about them in Asia. If you have toys, they'll build the toy, they'll design it, they'll distribute it, they'll do everything. If you want garments, they'll distribute, design, build, do everything. They'll orchestrate all the components of the supply chain for fulfillment. A lot of same brand, store brand kind of things go through Li & Fung. It's the most innovative supply chain group I've seen in many years. The other side, and I'll call it, you saw it here first, integrated multi-party logistics. That's where I don't just have a third party or a fourth 4PL, but rather I use a 1PL where I need it, sort of final mile logistics. I use a 2PL for certain kinds of freight capacities, warehouse capacities. I use a 3PL for long haul. I may use a 4PL. I mix them all together. If you've seen, I see this happening, the visibility and control being mediated through blockchain because it's a very dynamic space. People move in and out quickly. An interesting version of what I call IMPL is Amazon. Amazon Logistics is huge. It's a huge part of the company. And if you go and search for Amazon Logistics, they're begging people to join up and become logistics partners with them everywhere. Has everyone seen Uber commercials? Hey, go work for Uber. Amazon is even more aggressive. So these are things where blockchain is going to come in to create leading edge logistics capabilities. Okay. Those are a couple of the apps. There's a couple of the areas. I strongly urge, if you're not familiar with supply chain and SCOR, S-C-O-R, take a look at it. This gives you sort of the list of apps that are going to go out, things that people are already starting to develop. We're seeing development currently. The one problem, the teeny-weeny little problem to get to 2025 is adoption. Okay, I see basically three models of adoption. We have to have everybody in our industry use blockchain, or we're not going to use it at all, right? That's kind of adoption model one, which seems a little counterproductive. Adoption model two is I want to use supply chain inside my own company, and I mandate it with a few of my suppliers. Okay, a company like Google could mandate that. A company like Walmart could mandate that. You know, surprisingly, they might be. Okay, the third model basically is I want to buy what I need when I need it, and I want to talk to people at the time I need to talk to them. I don't know if I want to have a big consortium. I don't know if I have to build all of these things into a gigantic standard. And I'll talk about standards in a second. So let me talk through the six concerns. And this is to look at how your company or organization is driving some of this stuff forward. A lot of companies, when you bring up blockchain, they already said, I have something. I have it for intercompany communication. They'll have EDI. Everyone's got EDI. They'll say, oh, no, well, now I have APIs, so my vendors can, call in and do stuff. Well, APIs are kind of very 90s. Then they'll say, well, I have a portal, okay? I have a portal strategy, so my suppliers, my customers can log into a portal. It's nice to go to Walmart or to Target or to Boeing and say, oh, by the way, you have 150,000 suppliers. Every supplier has a portal to talk with you. Is that okay? So you have 150,000 credentials to log into and manage your order flow. Now, portals are very 80s, okay, sort of Madonna. A lot of them do business email-wise. I'm going to send you a purchase order by email. Wow, okay, that's super efficient, super secure. I'll take order over voice, or I'll send you a fax piece of paper. Okay, probably enormous number of companies are still in the email, voice, fax. You go to a company and say, sure, you've got some technology to do this. Everyone's going to be moving forward very quickly to the lowest cost, closer to real time, enabling error correction very quickly, reliable, secure. What does blockchain not do better than any of those existing technologies? It's a great question. When I bring it up, we already have EDI, we already have RosettaNet, that question halts, which is very, very convenient. Blockchain won't scale. And this is the one where I smile slyly to myself. It's like, okay, everyone realizes there are like 10,000 videos uploaded to, you know, YouTube every hour. Some obscene number of, you know, terabytes just chugging away. So if you're talking blockchain, a nice size company, 10,000 orders a month, wildly, let's say the ratio is 200 orders of transaction, you have about 2 meg of transactions per month, about 1K per transaction. Gosh, I've got 2 terabytes of data a month, okay? That's about one business dinner for someone from Google, okay? They can buy storage space till kingdom come to manage this. And this is this generation, okay? We're on, you know, HTML 1.0 of, you know, blockchain. This is going to get much faster. And as I spoke earlier, you know, I had conversations with certain people in a large networking company. It's like, when are you going to put this in the networking stack to handle a lot of the transaction flow? It's eminently stackable. You know, Hyperledger, single thread, IBM's going to be here later, great technology. 1,000 transactions a second. You're not going to run into any barriers on scalability in this, you know, unless, you know, you're going to ramp up by a factor of maybe 10 to 20 million per second. Okay, we're nowhere near that, okay? And this is only first generation, so it's scalable. It's a terrible database, okay? This is what I get from IT people. And my secret way to handle that is to simply agree with them, okay? Engineers, if you just agree with engineers, you're right. Oh, they're happy, right? They're satisfied because they were right. I said, yes, it's a horrible database. Okay, these databases for the transaction layer, SQL, you know, everyone's familiar with relational databases. You know, blockchain is something I would call an ISAM database, index sequential. You just keep lopping stuff on a, you know, a list, and it's got some stuff, makes it nice. That's why I keep pointing out you've got to have the visibility layer that indexes all the structured or unstructured content in the blockchain. So if I have a billion blocks, I don't search through a billion blocks for information. I can pull up the address and move in and do what I need to do with those blocks. And then I can also, on top of that, you know, do my analytics with, you know, neural databases, neural models to do all the smart stuff. On top of that, I'm handling all the control structures with event queues, another kind of data structure. Yeah, blockchain's bad as a database. Don't do event queues with blockchain. Don't do neural networks with blockchain. Don't do graph databases with blockchain. But use it and then layer the kind of data structures you need on top of it. Okay? And also, the number one other thing I get about it being a poor database, it's like, you can't edit it, you know? That's a feature, okay? That's part of the feature set. I don't know if people realize, when you get an EDI message in from a third-party supplier, do you know how often you'll get a human that goes in and grabs the FTP file and then edits it and change fields and then presses go so it starts to process? It's like, you know, well, they did something wrong. They need to fix the problem, not edit the... So that's another feature of blockchain. This is the one I strangely have the biggest arguments with. The beauty of standards is there's so many to choose from. So blockchain doesn't have any standards. So I've got those little packets, right? I've got those little toys, you know, in my, you know, scavenger hunt. I've got the little, my geocache notebooks, all this kind of stuff. How do I write notes in them? You know, what does a toy look like? This kind of stuff. What's the standard? Blockchain doesn't care. Blockchain's got a blob. You know, it's got a bit of a header and structure around that. In the blob, you know what? I can put in ANSI X12 packet. So ANSI X12, so being super nerdy, I can put an EDI 850 structured message, which is a purchase order. I can put an EDI 855 message response in. I can put an EDI 860 structured message change. I can put an EDI 865 structured message response into the blockchain. Everyone can read those message structures. Everybody. Everybody has software to handle that stuff. Everybody can handle the mapping in and out of their ERP or other transactional systems. It's everywhere. It's completely backwards convertible. And you know what? Accenture, IBM, others, this is how they're doing blockchain in parts of supply chain. Okay? Outside the United States, there's something called EDIFACT. It's from the United Nations. Actually, probably about 75% of all business-to-business transactions in the world are running through UN EDIFACT translation and data structures. It's a very common, replicable, you know, easy-to-use model, very pretty much the same. Has everyone heard of GS1? Okay. Has anyone ever seen one of those little things where they have little bars and you can scan it? And that's a GS1. GS1 maintains barcodes. They maintain RFID standards. GS1 also manage lifecycle tracking of materials and data. They've got some fantastic open standard data structures just ripe for pushing into blockchain to track inventory, materials, bills of material, changes, upgrades, and all the good stuff. Okay? Finally, has anyone ever heard of RosettaNet? Like, RosettaNet? Wasn't that kind of like 1997? Yeah. It's still in use significantly. Its structured messages are called PIPs. It's kind of a counterpart to ANSI 12, tens of thousands, and you're able to do more complex business logic inside their packets. If I was going to go to, and I have built blockchain solutions, and I wanted to do something I call the hello world of blockchain, which is track my order, track my logistics, track my delivery, I just use ANSI X12. I had a team offshore from Accenture, and I said, here's how you're going to do the X12 data messages. And they're like, well, where to get these? And I said, Google ANSI X12 850. Ah, yeah. So they got the structure. They built a spreadsheet. They mapped it all in. We had another client said, well, we do our logistics just a little bit differently. They simply the same messages, they remixed the sequencing. By the way, the sequencing was controlled by those nefarious contracts, smart contracts. I'll talk about them in a second. But these are common standards. There's a lot of other ones. There's ones for finance. You probably heard some of the names of those. Lots of data standards for the packets inside the blockchain. I don't view it as a problem of standardization. I view it as a problem of imagination, which standard and how are you going to use it. Okay. I dislike smart contracts. Number one, I think the name is extremely misleading. In fact, wildly misleading. It's not a contract. In almost every IT organization, you'll call these stored procedures. Okay, I can call a stored procedure in a blockchain that's stored as a piece of text. Okay, when I call the stored procedure, it returns a value. Okay, and it can trigger other stored procedures. Great, that's called a programming language. When I look at what's a contract, there's a lot of other features that a smart contract doesn't have per se. You know, I don't advise it to be used for financials. Accenture has a strong position. They don't advise using smart contracts to trigger, to originate, or to clear financial transactions. Okay? It's not strong enough. And this is something they feel very open about, and I've had some great conversations with Accenture leadership. You know, keep it with local programming, keep it under ordinary financial controls. It may be ready someday. By 2025, we don't expect it to be ready yet in terms of the normal risk control structures that you require to perform financial transactions. And I say this because large companies have fiduciary requirements to guarantee the integrity of their financials. I don't think they're going to get that fiduciary integrity control in place by 2025 through so-called smart contracts, okay? Stored procedures. What they can do, I can call a stored procedure when I write an invoice that calculates and says, does the invoice value match all the driving data? Hey, great. If it doesn't, it throws back a message and says, I don't accept the invoice. You have to go correct it. I can embed all sorts of controls for the sequencing and integrity within a blockchain. Okay, could be blockchain-based for the procedure. Is it super important? Might be in the future if you're dealing with a lot of integrity issues, but unfortunately had the indexing problem. The idea that I have a blockchain write that's dependent upon 10,000 other blockchain components and it has to know where they all are and search for all of them, I'm not sure that's great. Okay. Finally, check the order. Does the part number exist? Are the dates, times, addresses real? Are we within contractual limits? That's what we use smart contracts for routinely. So I'm going to set up a logistics relationship with a provider. and I put all the parameters of that relationship in a stored procedure or smart contract, and every time I do a write, it triggers to validate that the data that they're writing conform to the contractual arrangements that we agreed. That's a good use of it. Okay, so I kind of get my way of not using them, but actually using them, data validation. Finally, the last couple things, make my data public. Okay, private channels, mass data are the way to go. I had a client that was starting down blockchain. They started down a technology road that didn't allow for private blockchains, didn't allow for secure sort of partition blockchains. They got up to a point. Their partners said, no, we don't want our data in a public blockchain. It has to be in a private blockchain, and in fact, we prefer even further sub-partitioning. So private blockchain, only connecting to permission nodes, consensus validation. You can actually just have, as you heard earlier, header-only exchanges to maintain the integrity. Private channels, okay? So Ethereum doesn't today, I believe, have private channels, where Hyperledger does. Private channel means I can only, even though I have a blockchain with 30 participants, I can say participant one is only allowed to see this subset of transactions. Participant two can only see this subset of transactions. I have all the integrity of a blockchain and all the privacy of sub-partitioning it, okay? Then all of this is in private. No one else can connect, add, or has any visibility to it. Same way as you have, you know, VPN or private networks or private websites, this kind of stuff. Finally, at the field level, mask the data. If I want to share the data to a company that's doing analysis, I can mask all the data I don't like. Okay, I can unmask it with a stored procedure to read the data back out, if appropriate. Or, gosh, I could use something called homomorphic encryption. So here's my Sheldon. I can encrypt data that are measuring things in a way that no one can actually read the data, but I can perform mathematical transformations on the data and get valid results out, like benchmarking. Okay, homomorphic encryption encrypts the root data. I can't see what a particular company is doing, but I can collect the data together and see if all the measurements between two points are within a given limit. So this is how I can invoke benchmarking in a completely private manner if I so should I choose. Okay, so there's lots of options. In 2025, you're going to see pretty much only private blockchains. You're going to see private channels as the standard by which a lot of companies want to work. And you're going to see mass data as a way they handle encryption, is how they handle the specific privacy. So it's about the time. So this is kind of the 2025, a couple of apps, big changes in supply chain in the models that are coming up. I want to talk a little bit about the app world, like all these processes. You don't have to have silo technology. I showed you the silo, sort of the stack, where blockchain fits in supply chain. And, you know, if there's more you'd like to see, happy to talk. And are there questions?
Yeah, great presentation. I appreciate
thank you.
The details. The question I have simply is, targeting 2025 for the implementation of supply chain across the board, to what extent is the government's regulation standards keeping pace with that target date? And how well can you proceed along that path while this separate track progresses? Does it need to be in sync, or can you just blindly hope that by that time the supporting government regulations standards will be in place?
I think for intermodal, or not intermodal, but rather import-export type logistics, I think the industry is a little bit ahead of the government right now, and I think they're going to harmonize probably within 2 years, because it's going to be extremely financially efficient for both parties to play into that. Another big one is border security. So, you know, pre-approved movements, and there's a whole package around pre-approving inbound logistics to manage the friction. And I think they're going to get synchronized on that fairly quickly with blockchain. I would put that at roughly 3.5 years out. I think the EU is going to standardize much more rapidly. Okay, EU doesn't have the same border in and out, but EU has a whole set of requirements for if the UK sends something to Denmark, okay, they don't have to have customs clearance, but they have to have special kind of reporting to say goods of movements at which volumes. I think all of that will just, all the movements will just drop into blockchain, the reporting comes out. You don't have to have individuals managing that anymore. On the flip side, I think for military, so ANSI X12, what I was talking about with EDI, was in a large part driven by military requirements. So in fact, if you trade with the military, you must use EDI to perform the trades. I suspect the military is going to drive a huge volume of adoption, particularly for materiel, life cycle controls. So if I have a weapon system, I've got to do something to it, I've got to then hand it off to someone, they've got to hand it back, I've got to have someone else do something with it. Tracking all of those changes and understanding where all of that is horrendous today. Okay, blockchain, and I talked about some of the EPICS standards, make that actually quite transparent and relatively lightweight to manage. So I think we'll see some in that dimension. Are there questions?
One more question.
Oh.
I found it very interesting, your comment earlier on about smart contracts not being used for financial payments.
Yeah.
If I got it right. Yeah. So I was just wondering whether you could elaborate on that a little bit more and talk a little bit about what you see are the flaws or the deficiencies that potentially could not be corrected for the future.
So I think it has to do with the primary dimension is the materiality of a transaction, okay, or materiality of a set of transactions. So if you're talking about passing $1 between two parties, in a $50 billion company, the materiality of that is negligible, and that's totally acceptable, you know, potentially to do with smart contracts. The way smart contracts are generally implemented is they can loop at most 7 levels. So at worst, you might have $7, you know, or something like that flow out of control. If you're talking about smart contracts to pay a $1 million freight bill to Excel Logistics, the materiality of that is huge. It would be extremely dangerous to make the assumptions that I could simply do that without any oversight among the parties. And, you know, even in a $50 billion company, you're going to have about $1 billion in trade. That's 1% of probably their logistics to 2% of their logistics budget. That's a lot. So I think you're going to see it more around thresholds. Is that a materiality goes above a certain level, you shouldn't be using the financial triggers, stored procedures. Materiality is below a certain level, it's just noise, and that would be unacceptable. I think the principle is that they're non-verifiable. So from a fiduciary control, there are no controls adequate to guarantee that a given transaction is going to work and it's going to meet fiduciary requirements above a certain level. And that's what I think the big block is right now. So it's sort of like you still have to authenticate. You know, if I'm doing large wire transfers, you know, I'm the head of, you know, Nabisco, you know, I still have to have the C-level sign-off. Even those could be done automatically with current technology, they're not. So I think you're going to just see the inheritance of the same kind of blocks. That's okay. Any other? Thank you.